The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to episode 116 of the Pennsylvania Project. As you may know, here at the Pennsylvania Project, our vision is a better Pennsylvania. To achieve that vision, our mission is to boldly showcase the political, cultural, and environmental challenges facing contemporary Pennsylvania, and to relentlessly, vigorously, and methodically pursue correct solutions. But more important than solving the problem correctly is to solve the correct problem. And make sure your press release about it actually makes sense. We have another whiny episode planned for today, and like all episodes of the Pennsylvania Project, it's divided into three parts. You, them, and me. Part one is all about you, your questions, your opinions, your solutions, your whatevers. And rather than a call-in format, we utilize an email-in format. So if you have something to say, you can always drop us a line at pennsylvaniaproject.com. Today for the you part, we have our latest regular feature, Unscripted Cohorts, where I get hit cold with a question from our cohort. We also have a quick observation about my drinking habits and some observations on a green press release. And if you're listening live on Facebook, send in something in the chat window right now, and we'll get to it a few minutes just before we get to the green release. Hopefully we'll get enough stuff that we can put off that green release, but we'll see. After the you part comes part two, the them part, where each episode we host a guest to help showcase the political, cultural, and or environmental issues facing Pennsylvania. Today, our guest is all political. He's Robert Ziegler, Borough Council President of Milheim, Pennsylvania, and Democrat for State Senate in Pennsylvania's 34th District. After that comes the me portion of the Pennsylvania Project, where it will be my turn, your caster, Ken Krawchuk. I'll be focusing on some particular issue that really sticks in my craw. Today, I'll be picking back up on a theme I haven't hit in several episodes now. I'm going to be ranting about a bunch more ignored solutions that were first presented here on the Pennsylvania Project. And throughout the show, as is our long-established custom, we will be featuring a Pennsylvania Toastmaster to serve as narrator to read our live commercials. Today's narrator is making her first appearance on the Pennsylvania Project. She's Milena Farber from the Drexel Speaks Toastmasters Club at Drexel University in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Pennsylvania Project, Marlena.
Thanks for having me.
Marlena, I have a question for you. What do you like about being a Toastmaster?
I love being able to practice my public speaking and also help others get better at their own.
Yeah, that's true. How long have you been a Toastmaster now?
Just over a year.
Just over a year. Well, we'll see how well you do. Welcome to the Pennsylvania Project. We also have with us another Toastmaster, according to another one of our ancient customs. She's here to read and help respond to whatever comes into our mailbag and to join in on discussions with our guest. It's a role that we call cohort. Today's cohort is making her second appearance on the Pennsylvania Project. She is distinguished Toastmaster Rachel Hooks, president of the Pfizer Toastmaster Club in Collegeville, and a member of the Advanced Toastmasters Club, which is named the Tamara Smiley Hamilton Aspiring Speakers Club in Arlington, Virginia. She's also the District 38 parliamentarian. Welcome back to the Pennsylvania Project, Rachel.
Good to be here, Cam.
I know. It's good to have you back, too. And you're a parliamentarian?
Yes.
Isn't that a little bit of a dry subject?
Sometimes it is, but it helps to bring order to a dysfunctional meeting. And I know you served as Toastmasters, a district parliamentarian some years ago before me.
Four times now. It's a thankless job. It's great because you get to tell the presiding officer what to do, and they can ignore you.
True.
I feel like I'm at home with my wife. No, I'm kidding. My wife's a real doll. Arlington Club. It must be a Zoom club. Or do you live in Arlington?
No, I live in the area, and the opportunity presented itself to be a charter member of this club. Tamara Smiley Hamilton was a dear member of a club in the DMV area, and she's an accredited speaker. Uh-huh. And she's helped so many Toastmasters that District 27 wanted to have a club in her honor and continue the tradition of supporting and helping other Toastmasters and guiding those members to become accredited speakers as well.
That's great. And an accredited speaker is the highest honor that a Toastmaster can ever get. It's a juried award. You got to be good. You got to know your stuff.
Yes.
I have thought about doing it, but they say that all of your speeches have to be in front of a
live audience. And here I've done, 116 episodes now, and they're all in front of a radio audience, and none of them count.
Yes, they're changing some of the rules, of course, because of the pandemic, so... There could be opportunity there, Ken.
I know.
Because it goes back 3 years.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? During the pandemic, you don't have to have a live audience.
No.
You just gave me my ticket to being an accredited speaker. All right. Well, enough of that. You've been here often enough. You know our ancient custom. You're always supposed to bring a question. Hit me with cold so I can keep my edge in case I decide to run for governor again or something like that.
Absolutely. So the question today poses from a friend of mine who gave me the question regarding alcohol to go. So prior to the pandemic, you could not take alcohol out of a restaurant, but changing and allowing restaurants to have more, you know, more money revenues, they allowed for customers to be able to pick up, have alcohol to go, take on the road with them, of course, concealed. And so are the laws going to change where that's going to remain in effect and it's going to be a permanent staple for Pennsylvania, or will we go back to pre-pandemic?
Oh, I certainly hope we don't go pre-pandemic when it comes to alcohol. Pennsylvania is in the dark ages when it comes to alcohol. That was one of my campaign planks, was to eliminate the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, because Pennsylvania, I don't know if you know this, they are the fourth largest purchaser of alcohol on the planet.
No.
Yep. It's because it's all centralized. There's no choice. My favorite kind of wine, they don't sell it. I have to go to New Jersey to get it. And the place I go to in Jersey has a 20% case discount. Pennsylvania doesn't have any kind of a case discount. I should, your eyes lit up on that.
Yeah,
one.
Wow.
Plus, the place has a whole aisle of French Bordeaux, which is my favorite. I shouldn't talk about that because that's outside of Pennsylvania. But... yeah, let's hope they get rid of those Neanderthal laws, open container laws and things like that. I don't know who created that stuff. I mean, if somebody's drunk, yeah, throw their butt in jail. You know, they shouldn't be doing that in public.
No, absolutely not.
But it's definitely an idea whose time has come and gone. You know, it's funny. I was a speaker at University of Pennsylvania a couple of years ago during the governor campaign, and there was a forum on lowering the drinking age. And I went in there and... question was, and when I showed up, it was run by students, and students are cool. I love the way they run stuff because it's not professional, they're just friendly. And the guy says to me, so you're the libertarian, are you in favor of lowering the drinking age? I said, no, I'm not. And he looked at me funny, says, I thought libertarians were all in favor of lowering the drinking age. I says, no, I'm in favor of eliminating the drinking age. He's like, okay, sit down over here, sir.
That's very different.
It is. Well, first time you had a drink, were you 21?
No, I think I was much older. I'm one of those late bloomers.
I got to turn to Milena. Milena, was your first drink before you were 21?
I am German, Ken.
Okay, that's
culturally, we begin at 13.
Yes, there you go. And see, a lot of people do, so it's a one-size-fits-none solution. Anyway, I could talk about alcohol all day. We were just talking earlier, we had the president of Yards Brewing on here before, and he showed up with a case of beer. That was a lot of fun. Anyway, enough of so you ask Mark. Mark, do we have any Facebook questions? Oh, he's shaking his head. Your Facebook audience, you guys ought to do it. And I know a lot of people are listening. Just send something. Just say hello.
They usually wait until after we're done with the questions.
Right. So that way they don't get asked.
Yeah, exactly.
Turn around the show next time. We'll get them to do it the other way around. All right. Well, let's get to the listener questions. We got a couple of them, I know.
Sure. We have a couple of listener questions. One comes from Ralph McKendrick from Sellington, Pennsylvania. His question is, or statement, I watched a few of your live streams on Facebook.
See, there's somebody.
And I have a question. What's the Jack Daniels bottle that's always at your elbow during the show?
There it is. And that's my elbow that's always there. What's my elbow about it? And for the record, and for those not watching live stream, I do have a bottle of Jack Daniels here. It is a 200 milliliter bottle. It's pretty small, but it's full of water and not Tennessee whiskey, sad to say. When I rant and rave on talk radio, that's thirsty work, as you can guess. So I always keep my thirst-quenching bottle at hand. But the reason why I choose Jack Daniels is because they have these sturdy pint bottles, and they don't crinkle when I squeeze them, because background noises are anathema to talk radio. I mean, it's bad enough that WWDB doesn't provide me with a cough button that I could turn off the mic when I cough. least they could do is provide bottles that aren't crinkly.
Yes.
You have a bottle right there. What happens when you squeeze that?
I do. Pop the top and make some noise.
That's crinkly.
An ASMR channel.
And maybe they should stop Jack Daniels. I don't know. Anyway. And for the record, the only time we've ever had hard alcohol here in the studio is when my producer poured a round of shots to celebrate our 100th episode. And also, for the record, the reason I use the Jack bottle for water is because I'm too cheap to buy a real bottle. And it's good for recycling, it's good for the ecology. So chill out, Ralph. Calm down. Have a drink. And keep watching. And next time when I say anybody on Facebook have a question, that'll be the time to say that.
We have one more question, Cam.
Okay. Yeah, we got time for it. Let's go for it.
Chris Robinson from the communication team of the Green Party of Pennsylvania says he sent in a press release from the Pennsylvania Green Party titled Green Party Women Respond to PA Attack on Reproductive Rights.
Oh, no. The abortion issue. I think that issue dates all the way back to King Solomon when he said, let it be divided. And this, I read that press release. It does nothing to undivide things.
It's an age-old question.
I know. And yeah, I could tell my listeners, don't panic, because I am not going to talk about abortion. Instead, since I'm a distinguished Toastmaster and a professional public speaker, I want to focus on the press release as a press release, or as Ayn Rand would put it, a press release qua press release. And I'm not going to read it on the air, because as far as press releases go, this one definitely misses the mark. I mean, I've written hundreds, and this one doesn't do it. First of all, a good release should only focus on one topic. And this one starts off focusing on no fewer than three. Specifically, it mentions the Unborn Child Dignity Legislation, which is HB 118, the Heartbeat Bill, which is House Bill 904, and the Down Syndrome Protection Bill, which is House Bill 1500. Now, I hope you're taking notes when I said that, because nowhere in that verbose 800-word release does it go into any detail about those bills other than the name and the number up front. Instead, it quotes no fewer than five Green Party women who rant about a topic which is only tangentially related to those bills. For example, that first bill, it deals with the disposal of fetal remains. But all the five ladies, none of them mention it. All that they do is rant about abortion. And no, I'm not going to make any joke about carts and horses and things like that. So instead of a release that gives us info about all those bills, it's nothing but a digression, not to mention blanket insults of legislators, the media, and men in general. And speaking as a man, I'm very hard to insult anyway. That release is also full of logical fallacies, such as they equate an abortion to a vasectomy, when the logical comparison should be to a hysterectomy, excuse me. Or they also call for quote-unquote free birth control, when it's not free at all. It's us taxpayers who have to foot that bill. And this one made my wife laugh. It's a story about a widowed mother who somehow found herself pregnant. I don't know, maybe the spirit moved her, I don't know. And the release also quotes statistics that Snopes has already debunked. And whoever proofread that thing, they seem to be unaware of the difference between the words effect and affect. Another one, that's one of my wife's pet peeves.
Always.
And the whole press release, it would be laughable if it wasn't such a serious subject, which deserves serious consideration.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some things I liked about it. As bad as the release was, I loved the way they sprinkled a lot of double entendre humor throughout all of it. And I'm not going to quote, any.
No,
this is a family show. They had some nice turns of phrase. Longtime listeners know that I love a lot of alliteration, and this release had a lot of alliteration, such as pushing past the patriarchy. I like that one. And prosecuting people who are pregnant. And my favorite, maternal morbidity.
Mm.
It's just such colorful language. I just loved it. So despite that, though, count yourself lucky. I didn't read it on the air. Now, Rachel, I sent you a copy. What did you think?
It's a lot to manage. It's a lot to manage. I will have to get back to you on that one.
Okay, definitely. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we put this release to bed and we can move on to other subjects. And by the way, if I disappointed any of our listeners by talking only about the release and not talking about abortion, I don't know who'd be disappointed, but if you are interested, you can check out episode 77, where I went into the whole abortion issue at length. And if you don't feel like suffering through listening to episode 77, you can read it on my old gubernatorial position paper on my gubernatorial website, kenk4pa.com/abortion. And I am wearing my Ken K for PA t-shirt today in honor of that. Well, you can read it, kenk4pa.com/abortion, but it's obvious the Green Party never read it because it does present a solution to the abortion debate. But on that abortive note, that's going to have to do it for the U portion of episode 116 of the Pennsylvania Project. We're going to pause for this information, and when we return, we will be meeting with today's guest, Robert Ziegler, Borough Council President of Milheim, Pennsylvania, and Democrat for State Senate in the 34th District.
Did you hear the latest news? Almost two-thirds of all federal spending now goes to pay for the welfare state. More than $2.2 trillion, which just about equals federal income. Do you realize what that means? Virtually all tax revenue is now being consumed by the welfare state. But how do we rein in that runaway spending before it destroys America? The answer? The separation of society and state. That's the premise of the new novel, Atlas Snubbed, an unsanctioned parody sequel to Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. Atlas Snubbed presents a workable alternative to the welfare state as we know it. Atlas Snubbed expertly extends Rand's epic story of a looter's world snubbed by the men of the mind, bringing to life a crumbling post-apocalyptic world where no one need ask who is John Galt, because now they know. Atlas Snubbed, available at all online bookstores or through atlassnubbed.com. Read it today before it's too late.
Here's an interesting question. What do you think of these three ideas? Number one, people have at all times an inalienable right to alter, reform, or abolish their government as they think proper. Number two, juries shall have the right to determine the law, as well as the facts. Number three, the right of the citizens to bear arms in defense of themselves and the state shall not be questioned. Do those words sound like they're something taken from a Hollywood political thriller? They're not. They're all direct quotes from Article 1 of the Pennsylvania Constitution. Everyone's heard of the United States Constitution, but have you ever heard of the Pennsylvania Constitution? Have you ever read it? But most importantly, was it ever taught to you in school? If you're like virtually all Pennsylvanians, the answer are likely to be no, no, and no. Well, it's long past time we change those answers to yes, yes, and yes. And you have a crucial part to play in making that come to pass. As you know, we here at the Pennsylvania Project are all about solutions, so we've authored a petition demanding that the Pennsylvania Constitution be taught to our children. If you believe it's important for our children to know how our state government works, head over to our website, pennsylvaniaproject.com, and add your name to the growing list of signers. And every time we accumulate another batch of signatures, we'll send a copy of the petition to the governor, the Pennsylvania Board of Education, and each and every one of the 500 school districts in Pennsylvania, asking them right now to start teaching our children the Pennsylvania Constitution. So please sign the petition at pennsylvaniaproject.com. The alternative is yet another generation that has never heard of, let alone read, the Pennsylvania Constitution. And people wonder why no one votes anymore.
As long as they don't vote any less. Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to the Them portion of episode 116 of the Pennsylvania Project, where we host a guest to help showcase the political, cultural, and or environmental issues facing Pennsylvania. Today's guest is all political. He's Robert Ziegler, Borough Council President in Milheim, Pennsylvania, out there near State College, pretty countryside. He's serving a second term in that office, too. He's also the Democratic candidate for State Senate in the 34th District, also out that way. He tells me his degree is in political science and his master's is in business and public administration. And it looks like he's putting both of them to good use out there. Welcome to the Pennsylvania Project, Robert.
Thank you, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. No, it's good to have you. You and I go back a couple of years. I ran into you on the campaign trail.
Yeah, when you were running for governor in 2018, I met you at the Hook.
Yeah.
The Frosty Hook.
Nice little bar. I mean, what's the name of the town? I forget the name of the town.
It's Spring Mills.
Spring Mills.
And yeah, technically it's a tavern, I guess, because they do rent rooms there too, I believe.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that was a difference. And
I don't really know. I think that's what they call themselves.
maybe if I was German, I would know the difference. I don't know. No, it was a good time. I mean, there's only like, what, four or five houses. And we had, and you also know Michelle Grove. She was a guest on our show. Probably over a year ago. I'm going to see if I can get her husband.
I remember at that event too that Joe Sulawski, who's currently running for governor for the upcoming election, he was there as well.
Yes, he's our heir apparent for the gubernatorial nomination in 2022. And my wife is just so relieved because, you know, people ask me, am I going to run again? And I say, you can ask my wife if you want to know that. But when you do ask, duck, you know, just watch out. No, it's a good time. I enjoyed running. I would run again, but I'm not going to do it. We'll let Joe do it. And Joe's pretty good. And Joe is a Toastmaster. We'll give him that.
Oh, great.
And I got him to join, too. I take the blame. I take the blame for a lot of Toastmasters. Malena's my fault, too. Joe, are you... What was I going to say? No. Turn around the other way. Robert, are you Toastmaster?
No, I'm not.
But
definitely an interesting group. You guys have stirred up my interest in it. That's for sure.
Uh-huh. Well, we got a commercial coming up about it. Hopefully it'll stir it up a little more. So you're a Democrat.
Yes, sir.
That's pretty brave coming on a liberty-oriented show like this.
Well, you know, my experience being out here is that you, in order to better yourself, you should go to places where you're not necessarily fully comfortable.
Uh-huh.
Uncomfortable, potential uncomfort leads to growth. So, plus, I know you can. I trust you.
Well. We'll see how. Trust me for what? We'll see about that. So, well, I got to ask you the key question: definition of libertarian. Do you believe you have the right to live your life your way, provided you respect the rights and property of others?
Of course.
Then you're a libertarian. What's this Democrat stuff?
Everyone is a little bit of a libertarian, whether they want to believe that or not. That's just the fact of nature.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from your mouth to the White House's ears, right?
Yeah, and actually, I used to consider myself a libertarian politically for a while ago, but the way that our system is rigged, that I have to be registered as a Republican or a Democrat to have a better chance of getting in office. Technically, I guess that goes against Article 1, Section 5, with like elections shall be free.
Yes, sir. All elections shall be free and equal.
Yeah, and so if it was truly free and equal, I would need the same amount of signatures if I was a different party, a challenger party, if you will.
Uh-huh. Do you know, we have a ballot access coalition that we put together, and we're out to reform Pennsylvania ballot access laws. We've had some success in the past. Like, for example, when I ran for governor in 2002, I had to collect 21,000 signatures because there's a complex formula that keeps changing. It was as high as 67,000 when the two old parties only need 2,000. That's a big difference. But we challenged that.
Yeah.
I was a plaintiff on the bill, and in 2016, we got that reduced to 5,000. It's not equal, but it's a step in the right direction, and I'll take it. So that's why I ran for governor in 2018, is because suddenly I could again. But you said, is it just the ballot access issue that makes you a Democrat? Is there something you disagree with about the libertarian platform?
I in general, with things that have been happening, I've been going more with Democrats on the variety of issues. I don't really say I disagree with libertarians. I think like it's a matter of coming up with the best solutions that benefit the most amount of people.
I hear you.
So I can't really say I disagree like necessarily. I have certain viewpoints, and I'm like, well, I don't think that view is going to work for based on my experience. But maybe we can get to some sort of compromise, or maybe we can get some sort of thing that works out for both parties or make us both slightly annoyed.
When it comes to respecting the rights and property of others, what's the compromise? You know, I'm going to respect your rights, except I'm going to throw a party in your living room in the middle of the night. I'm not going to respect your property. I mean, how do you divide up that question? You're either going to respect somebody or not. It's like being a little bit pregnant.
Well, yeah, I guess what it comes down to is, you know, some people don't know that they're being disrespectful of other people's property, or they don't understand what that respect is. So sometimes you do, like, I feel sometimes the government does need to step into certain things try to help reestablish business. Like, not business, but it does affect business. But in some areas, they kind of need to step in to be like, hey, you guys are kind of going too far here. You need to stop doing this in order to protect people.
Right.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about the smoking law, right?
Mm-hmm.
At first, you could smoke anywhere back in the 50s, 60s, 70s.
But when I smoked.
You could smoke everywhere, anywhere, on the airplane, and there was no restrictions.
Yep.
And then the law was passed that, you know, you couldn't smoke with inside indoors. First, it was federal buildings, and mm-hmm. then it carried on to other buildings, other establishments, and then, like, some apartment buildings, like, you can't smoke in either, and that's your home.
Mm-hmm.
But when you disrespect the rights of others, causing
people
to have bronchitis issues yep. and nasal passage issues and things like that, it affects other people beyond yourself.
That's right. You're not respecting your neighbor if you're blowing smoke in their face or smoking in their restaurant. And me as a business owner, I could certainly say, you're not allowed to smoke here.
Mm-hmm.
On the contrary, you could say, you are allowed to smoke here. And as I remember, Robert, the Frosty Mug allowed you to smoke there.
Yes, I think they did. I don't know if they still do, but at the time, they were allowing smoking in there.
What was that, 2 years ago? 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Even with Las Vegas, when you go to the airport, there's a smoker section that's enclosed
uh-huh.
and filtered. So it allows people who want to smoke to have that, but not affect other people. So
mm-hmm.
that's a good compromise.
Yep. That's good libertarian law, too, respecting the rights and property of others. I guess,
yep.
Robert, while we're on the subject of libertarian things, what do you think about taxation?
Well, you know, libertarians would say that taxation is theft.
That is true. Plain and simple.
I have a little bit of issues with, like, how legislators and, like, local elected officials may use funds. I have less issues with tax funds that are specific purposes,
because
then I know where the money's supposed to go, assuming that it's not being essentially laundered to other areas. Because, you know, at the state level, I remember they were trying to – I forget what bill number it was, but they were trying to lump together all these different little bills or different pots, so to speak, like for recycling and all these other funds, and to be going into the general fund. And as someone who tends to distrust, in general, some people in government, I don't trust them to do what's right with that money in the general fund.
You got everybody smiling, nodding their head here, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I know how I am in governance. Like, I'm pretty transparent and very open about things because I believe transparency builds trust. That's just kind of a thing. I just believe it. I do it. That's just what I do.
Uh-huh.
However, there are many people that are elected that don't abide by that type of concept. So there needs to be checks and balances for those types of people in office.
Yep, I agree. And, you know, it's funny because when you started saying that, I was going to say, how can we trust you? But you already answered that question. It's that transparency that does it. And as long as you can keep that up, because there are some people when they get in office, they just change.
Well, if you are lying, you kind of can't keep track of the lies. If you're honest
yes.
all the time, even if you make mistakes, at least they appreciate the honesty.
Uh-huh. You know, that's how I raised my kids when I talked about lying. That's how I told them why it's wrong, because you're creating a false reality. And at some point, that reality is going to clash with the real reality, and you're going to hurt someone's feelings. You're going to look like an idiot, or you're going to get fired, or something terrible is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like best about the truth is I don't have to keep track of it because it keeps track of itself.
It does.
Now, I want to back up to what you said about dedicated funds. I agree with that completely. And probably the best example I could think of, which is not a tax, is the gas tax. Because according to the Pennsylvania Constitution, all money for the gas tax goes exclusively for the maintenance and repair and construction of bridges and highways and roads. And, you know, it's odd because that's not true. Even though it says...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, because the Auditor General actually checked into that, and then some of the money was going to the police.
Yep. Well, you know, that's okay, because we talked about this. I don't remember which episode it was. It was one of the early ones, like around 15 or 20. Somebody had asked about that very thing. And one of the things it says in the Pennsylvania Constitution is also says safety on the highways. Pennsylvania State Police get roughly two-thirds of their funding from the gas tax. It's not a gas tax. It's a user fee. If you use the highways, you pay it. If you don't use the highways, you don't pay it.
Yeah.
It's a user fee. But I think that's a valid use to keep the highways safe. Not that I agree with the stop signs. I was talking about this last episode about how we came up with a way to stop people from rolling stop signs, and I'm not going to get into that now. But the police are good. Generally speaking, I'm in favor of the police. I'm a graduate of the Abington Citizens Police Academy. I'm going to mention that later on in the show, too. But it's okay. But they're using it for mass transit. Now, that's not the maintenance of the highways. They're using it for educational purposes. Well, you can argue that one. But there's all sorts of other things outside of the maintenance, construction of highways and bridges. They do a lot of that. Now, when you become the senator, the Constitution also says that you receive a salary, mileage, and no other compensation whatsoever. Are you going to accept any other compensation whatsoever?
I believe you're referring to per diem, and the answer is no, I don't plan on it.
Oh, you demand, sir. There's another one of those libertarian streaks in you. Well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the mileage. It's part of the job, right? It's public service.
Yeah.
So why would I take extra money that technically isn't in the Constitution? And, you know, one thing that really irks me with that is that the fact that with this money, there's no transparency about how the money is being spent.
Yep.
Well, updated transparency, I should say.
Yep.
How that money is spent, especially with expense accounts. It's like, you know, if you're going to have per diem, you shouldn't have expense accounts. If you're going to have per expense accounts, you shouldn't have per diem.
Yep.
I don't get why people can double dip.
But just read the Constitution, man. That's all it takes. And I'm proud of you for bringing that point up. It shows you know what you're doing. Hey, I'm your caster, Ken Krawchuk, and you're listening to episode 116 of the Pennsylvania Project. We'll be right back after this information with more from our guest, Robert Ziegler, Borough Council President in Milheim, Pennsylvania, and Democratic, almost Libertarian candidate for State Senate in the 34th District.
Are you a small business owner always looking for referrals? Do you have a streamlined approach to generating new referrals? Contact Stephen Morley to learn the fast, easy way to generate new referrals. Stephen has an all-inclusive system that will help you generate an extra 5 to 10 customers per week without spending a single dollar on ads. You won't have to create a website, have pictures taken, or write a single ad. Stephen will take the headache out of the process. Contact him at stephenworley.com. That's Stephen with a V, W-E-R-L-E-Y.com.
Hey, Distinguished Toastmaster Rachel Hooks here, cohort on the Pennsylvania Project. You know, it's easy to find a high-paying job. At least for some people, it is. Employers are begging for competent leaders who know how to communicate effectively. But do those words describe you? Competent leader? Communicates effectively? If not, or even if they do, you may want to consider joining Toastmasters. The mission of Toastmasters is to provide a supportive experience for learning communication and leadership skills. But does it really work? Hey, look at me. I joined Toastmasters and now I'm on the radio. So turn your life around like I have. Visit Toastmasters.org and contact a club near you. Visitors are always welcome. And be sure to mention you heard it on the Pennsylvania Project radio show. The future is anxiously awaiting competent leaders who know how to communicate effectively. You can be that leader. It all starts at Toastmasters.org.
420 Print Media is a creative agency exclusively serving the cannabis industry. If you need to get your brand noticed, we will help you make it happen. With over 30 years of combined experience, the team at 420 Print Media can help you take your ideas from concept to production. We specialize in design and sourcing of all print media products, including packaging, trade show booths, grand format and signs, vehicle graphics, and more. As a culturally centered agency, it is our belief that the descheduling of cannabis and legalization are paramount to all human liberty. It's a plant, not a crime. All you need is the idea. We will show you the way. The future is green with 420 Print Media, the cannabis brand management agency. For more information, visit 420printmedia.com or follow us on Instagram at 420_print_media.
Hey, Ken Krawchuk here. We are back with episode 116 of the Pennsylvania Project and our guest, Robert Ziegler, Borough Council President of Milheim, Pennsylvania, and Democratic candidate for State Senate in the 34th District out that way. Now, Robert, we talked a lot about issues and stuff like that, and that's more of the Pennsylvania level thing. But you're a borough council president, dude. You run the town. I want to talk about that for a bit.
Well, I wouldn't say I run the town. I would say we run the town. But it was five of us. I don't like to take full credit for things. It's been pretty exciting. I'd say I was appointed in August of 2018 because, there was some hoopla that happened locally involving weeds, the weed ordinance. And by that I mean grass, actual lawn care.
Oh, it's not smokable weed.
No, yeah. Disappointingly so. After that event, I just started going to the meetings, taking notes, and trying to hold them accountable.
Yep. I got to jump in there because that's how I got involved in politics. I started going to my local meeting, just sitting in the back, and I saw them doing stupid stuff, and I just started speaking out about it. Next thing you know, they're asking me to volunteer for boards and help them out with local stuff. And then the Libertarian Party says, Ken, you ought to run for office. You're doing stuff. And
always.
Never ends.
Anytime you raise your hand.
Yep. People get you doing stuff.
People get you to do it.
So, Robert, your story sounds like mine. So you wound up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what happens next?
I went there and I would make suggestions because, my undergrad was in political science and I had a master's in business administration, public administration. So I have ideas. I've studied some of the stuff that they're dealing with. And my dad was in local government as a code enforcement and recreations officer for about 24 years or so. So doing local government stuff, I saw the stuff that he dealt with, and I could usually come up with ideas from where I grew up. And then they're just like, hey, you have ideas. We have some people that are resigning because of different jobs that they're taking. Are you interested? And so there I was, voluntold to do it, I guess.
Voluntold. I like that word. Mm-hmm. The rest, as they say, is history. And then you campaigned for the position after that?
Yeah, in 2019, we had three seats that were open. So the other person I was appointed and myself ran, and Katie Bloom, who's involved with some state level stuff, she ran as well. And the three of us got in pretty easily. It was unopposed, so it wasn't like a very daunting election. But, you know, I still did the door knocking. I still talked to people, get insights. I wanted to know how they thought we were doing, what needed to be done, what they feel that needed to be done. And people in general were okay with things. But there were a few issues I saw that were problems that needed addressed.
I'm all ears.
Out here.
Right. What were those problems?
Yeah. So, one thing was I thought we could save money going solar. You know, because the prices of doing solar was so much lower.
Yeah.
It's so much cheaper and cheaper to do it. And we have a place called we have a business, a grocery store out here, and they did a giant solar array as a carport, and it's I think the first of its kind in the country or second of the kind. It's very rare. And so I asked about it, and it was going to cut down the cost by about 70%.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, well, how can we do that here? Because the borough has property they have, and we also do our own water and sewer. So our sewer plant takes a lot of electricity to operate, even though it's just a town of about 900 people. And, we just did some research, and we were able to come up with a way to, hey, we're going to do we're going to lease this property out to this solar company, and then they're going to sell us the electricity at a discounted rate. So they make some money, we save some money. West Bend Power gets the SRECs that they need to have, and then it's everybody wins.
Yep.
So
yeah. And when I was running for governor, that was one of my platform planks, because there are companies out there that will come out and they will put all the solar panels on your house for free. All you have to do is agree to buy the electricity that it makes. And the rate that they sell you that electricity is cheaper than the regular utilities. And it's a no-brainer. Now, why can't we do that to all of the state buildings? There have got to be thousands of them, you know?
That's actually one of the things I wanted to look at, because the state has tons of assets that are underutilized.
Yep.
Or that just waste of space. So looking at the assets that they have, and basically maximizing them for opportunities like solar. I mean, there's a bunch of developers that are looking to lease land and pay people for it.
Yeah.
And so the farming industry, for example, they have this prime real estate for solar, and it can work with growing. Like, they have ways you can grow with the solar arrays.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can, if you're a sheep farmer, you can have the sheep graze the areas and it doesn't affect the solar panels. Oh, wow. It sounds silly, but it's true. And so the farmer could benefit.
Milena's here laughing about sheep farmer. We had a guest on who's a goat farmer.
Oh, wow.
There you go. Anyway, I interrupted.
I'm laughing because I work on solar panel projects for community gardens and urban farms. So
oh, man.
That's why I'm laughing.
You're right at home. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah,
go, Robert.
It's a big opportunity. It is a big opportunity. And on top of that, you're putting more supply into the system, which keeps prices down because there's more supply.
Yep.
So not only could farmers benefit from that economically, they also revitalize the soil because it's not being used for regular farming practices as much. And they save money on electricity because the rates are being lower because there's more supply.
Yeah.
We should, everybody wins.
Yeah, we should kick those assets into high gear.
Yeah. And you know, as long as we're not destroying green space or anything like that, obviously you got to save and conserve the environment as much as possible because that ties into Article 1, Section 27.
Yep.
So,
boy, you're near and dear to my heart, man. That's the third time you quoted the Pennsylvania Constitution. Fourth time. Not many people know it.
Well, I don't. I know bits and I mix up the numbers sometimes. I'm not going to lie. Like I'm not perfect at it.
Uh-huh.
But I remember a few. I remember a few that are key ones. And so you have all these legislators that don't really abide by the Constitution, even though they say that they're constitutionalists.
Yeah.
So I just find that very interesting.
Yeah.
It's both parties. But usually it's the majority party that tends to, regardless of which political party, it's usually a majority party that tends to really not abide by that.
Yep, until they become the minority party, and then the old minority party starts doing it. I call them the two old parties. I mean, they're just, they've been around.
That's a fair statement, I guess.
Yeah, and old ideas and a lot of plans for your money that they're going to use their way, where I think you should live your life your way. But don't get me started again. We'll wind up talking about stuff. So what are your chances in the race for state Senate?
The one issue we addressed locally, too, is broadband. And I kind of got businesses out here, like a business, a company come out here, and they put their own money into it. And I just coordinated the local governments to pass the franchise agreements necessary for them to use our right-of-ways. And because, to coordinate local governments is like herding cats.
I know, man.
And for them to operate fast is also hard to do.
You touch on something that's kind of unlibertarian. That's that whole licensing of the broadband locally. I mean, my hometown of Abington, Verizon had Fios up the corner, two houses away from me. It was there for years. And they said, no, we're not going to do that yet because you got to do it the way we want you. Yeah. Cut me a break. What's the role of government to do anything with regulating broadband coming in? Can't the companies just come in and lay their cable or even Starlink? They got satellites up there.
Oh, no, we were giving them the permissions to use our borough rights. Well, for us, the borough's right away that we have on the property so they could just install it.
Uh-huh. Okay. I guess right away is something valid. That's property rights there.
Yeah, exactly. And so they were not infringing on our property rights. And in my sense. And they were asking for permission to use it for a certain point of time. And then we negotiated with them free internet service for our local library, free internet service for the borough building, and free cable services for the fire hall, too.
So
the fire hall does a lot of good work into the library.
Kickbacks.
And we were kind of relieved. Yeah. I haven't said kickbacks, but it's
public service.
It's compensation for the right of way, and it saves taxpayers money and helps to nonprofit entities that benefit the community.
Yep. No, all sounds good, man. I would agree. And you'd want to get the free services out of the people coming in like that.
And we have 1 gigabit speed, so the broadband is an issue for the counties nearby me. So since I'm like a quote broadband guy, I think I have a good chance because I actually did something that the state didn't do.
There you go. It's going to be good. You know, Robert, one thing, time always goes by so quickly here. I got a whole bunch of other things I wanted to talk to you about. Maybe we're going to have to bring you back sometime or something like that and hit you on some of these other issues that you were talking about. But we're going to have to wrap it up. But before we do, I always give the guest an opportunity to talk about anything they want. 30 seconds or a minute, we had one guy talk about his favorite Western author, somebody else complaining about puppy mills. We got, I don't know, 2-3 million people in the sound of our signal here. Robert, what do they need to know?
Well, I'm going to shamelessly plug myself, if that's okay.
Anything at all, sir. The airwaves are yours.
Yeah. So I am running for the PA State Senate, the 34th District. It's Central Pennsylvania, against Jake Corman, whose family's been in the office for 44 years at the end of his term.
Wow.
So if you want a guy who's not in it to make a dynasty, I'm your guy. And my website is ZieglerForPA.com. I stand for accountability, responsibility, and transparency. And I'm on social media, ZieglerForPA, and it's on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm pretty straightforward and direct, so you guys can always ask me anything, and I'll answer it. You might not like the answer.
Yep. That's all right. You know, I actually said that once. Some lady said, I don't believe what you're saying is correct. I said, then don't vote for me. Now, do me a favor. Spell your website.
So it's ZEIGLER4PA.com.
F-O-R or the digit four?
I guess I should spell that out. F-O-R-P-A.com.
When I ran, it was KenKForPA.com, and I did four and F-O-R, and they both went to the same place.
Yes, I still have your magnet, sir.
It has some kind of an attraction to it, doesn't it? Broom-tsh. That's going to have to thank you, sir. That's going to have to wrap it up for the then portion of episode 116 of the Pennsylvania Project. My thanks once again to our guest, Robert Ziegler, Borough Council President in Milheim, Pennsylvania, and Democratic candidate for State Senate in the 34th District. We're going to pause for this information, and when we return, I'm going to be ranting about a whole bunch more ignored solutions that were first presented here on the Pennsylvania Project.
The following is a commercial announcement.
Hey, Malena, how's it going?
Bad, Ken. Really bad.
Why? What's the matter?
Our friends at the Infernal Revenue Service paid me a personal visit the other day.
The Infernal Revenue Service?
Yep. Call them what they are. They sent these two big brutes to the house, scared us half to death.
I bet. What do they want?
Money. Lots of it. Remember that part-time gig I took on last summer?
Oh, yeah. You were raking in some big bucks.
Yeah. And all those big bucks went straight into my personal bank account. Turns out the IRS doesn't like that. And I didn't file any of the right forms or pay nearly enough in taxes. So now they want it all right now. Plus penalties and interest.
Ouch. It sounds like you should have called Amendment 16.
Hey, it's the damn 16th Amendment that got me into this predicament in the first place.
No. Amendment 16, the invoicing service. They'll invoice your client for these hours and expenses you report to them. And when your client pays them, they pay you. Minus all required state and federal taxes. It's that easy. One call does it all. And they'll even have an accountant do your personal taxes for you come April 15th.
And they take care of all the taxes? All the forms?
Yep, and they can pass along certain tax breaks, too.
Man, I wish I knew about Amendment 16 sooner. Where can I find them?
On the web, of course, at amendment16.com, with 16 spelled out. That's amendment, SIXTEEN.com. One call does it all.
Have you heard the big news? The Pennsylvania Project is expanding dramatically. Each episode is now being broadcast multiple times a week on WWDB Talk Radio in Philadelphia, and the show has recently gone into syndication across Pennsylvania. Our success can be your success as well. A limited number of opportunities have recently become available where you can advertise affordably on the Pennsylvania Project. Not only will your message be heard throughout Pennsylvania's largest media market by far, all past episodes are always available for downloading at PennsylvaniaProject.com, at WWDB's website, on iTunes, and for many other popular podcast providers. So here's your chance to become a permanent part of the first liberty-oriented talk radio show on WWDB since the legendary Irv Homer hung up his headphones. Interested? Drop us a line at PennsylvaniaProject.com today.
Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to the me portion of episode 116 of the Pennsylvania Project, where I get to rant a bit about something that really sticks in my craw. Today I'm going to be ranting about a whole bunch more ignored solutions that were first presented here on the Pennsylvania Project. To give you a quick recap, what I started doing several episodes ago now was to go all the way back to episode 1 and dig out solutions that we've mentioned here over the years that have not yet been put into practice, sad to say. I've made it all the way up to episode 9 so far, and we've uncovered 15 of them to date. And we're going to be doing 3 or 4 more today, depending upon the time. I started this re-reporting back in episode 108, where I did the first 5 solutions that are still being ignored today. To recap, they are how to get rid of potholes, how to stop pollution, how to stop people from rolling stop signs, as I mentioned earlier, how to stop women from being subjected to human trafficking, violence, and victimization, and number five, the solution to the abortion debate, which I referred to earlier in today's show, kenk4pa.com/abortion, but I digress. Next up, in episode 109, I talked about four more solutions. They were biggies. How to reduce gun violence. How to stop idiots with guns from being idiots with guns. How to eliminate the high cost entirely of holding primary elections. And another big one, dramatically reducing the cost of health care. Then in episode 10, I got in four more. How to stop inflation in Pennsylvania. A solution to the restrictive marriage laws we have here. How to end second-class citizenship. And another big one, number 13, how to end school shootings. And I went on and on. In episode 113, I snuck in two more. A solution to addressing drug use besides the insane war on drugs. And I also came up with the first of three solutions to the whole dilemma of who uses what bathroom. And if you want to see the details of those, check out the rants at the end of episodes 108, 109, 110, and 113. Well, that's enough of the history. Let's pick up with two more solutions to the question of who uses what bathroom, which I first presented back in episode 9. But before I do, let me sum up in one sentence what the first solution was to the bathroom issue. It's a line that I stole from the biker community, and pardon me for being too descriptive. Let those who ride decide. But you can go back to episode 113 for the details. I'm not going to go into it now. But the second solution, which I presented then in episode 9, is something I call don't ask, can't tell. Can't tell. Don't ask, can't tell. Can't talk, right? Let me give you two simple examples of how it works. Number one, if you identify as a man, dress like a man, act like a man, who would raise an eyebrow if you used the men's room? Nobody. And number two, the converse, if you identify as a woman, dress like a woman, act like a woman, who would notice you using a ladies' room? Nobody. Or to put it colloquially, if you walk like a duck or whatever, you're a duck. Bottom line is that if your gender identity is sincere, whenever you duck into the bathroom, nobody's going to tell and you won't have to ask. So that was an easy one. Just don't ask, can't tell. And yes, you can call it stereotyping, and I'm surprised that liberals support it, but that's another question. But there is a third solution to the bathroom issue, which I presented also back in episode 9. I call it pushing out the pusher. And as you probably know, there is a pusher here in Pennsylvania who's pushing bathroom access solutions onto us. Pusher has a name. It's called the Title IX Civil Rights Law. The feds passed. Yep. Title IX has butted into Pennsylvania's bathroom, pun intended. The law says you can't discriminate based on sex in places that receive federal dollars. But bathrooms are already inherently discriminatory, aren't they? They're based on sex because they allow men to use the men's room, right? If you allow men to use the ladies' room or vice versa, or allow men to use the men's room or the ladies' room or whatever room, no matter what you do with your federally funded bathroom, you're violating Title IX because you're doing it based on sex. The dilemma that nobody is talking about except here on Pennsylvania Project. And since we're all about solutions here, the only way, the only solution to Title IX is to push out the pusher and stop taking federal funds. Don't accept the bribe. Taking money from the feds is like taking free samples from your neighborhood drug pusher. Once you start, you're hooked. And the next thing you know, that pusher is dictating what bathroom you can or can't use. So the solution is to push out the pusher. So to sum up those three solutions to the bathroom issue, let those who ride decide. Don't ask, can't tell. Push out the pusher. And I'm looking, we have time for one more solution today. Also from episode 9, this is a biggie as well, how to get drunk drivers off the road. I learned this one the hard way. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a graduate of the Abington Citizens Police Academy, believe it or not. And one thing I did after graduating was to help man DUI checkpoints. Believe it or not, how, you know, libertarian working in unconstitutional checkpoint, go figure. What I learned my first night is that checkpoints don't work. There were eight people hauled away in irons my first night, and not one of them was drunk to my eye. Not one. They all walked the line, touched their noses, but eight lives ended up being ruined. But there was one person who was drunk, but he was not hauled away in irons. He got away. The whole story of how this happened is in episode 9, if you want to hear it, about how DUI checkpoints are flat out wrong, plain and simple. And a better solution to drunk drivers was revealed by studies conducted by the FBI. They showed that roving patrols are much more effective at catching impaired drivers. And not just drunks, but sleepy people, angry people, people on prescription drugs. And not only are they more effective, according to the FBI, they're cheaper. And according to this libertarian, they don't violate the Constitution. Is it me or what? There's the solution right there. An FBI study, for God's sake. Somebody please, please tell me why. Why do we have DUI checkpoints? Roving patrols are better, but you heard it first. 107 episodes here, but it's something that's still being ignored today. Anyway, there you have it. Three more solutions from the early days of the Pennsylvania Project. Number 1 and 2, more solutions to the bathroom issue. Number 3, how to get drunks off the road. Which brings our tally to 18 unimplemented solutions extracted from across a mere 9 episodes at an average of 2 per episode. And there's still another 100 plus episodes to go, all serving for still more rantable fodder and more solutions for yet another day. And I know I'm repeating myself, but what I like best about all these solutions we've been coming up with, they all fit nicely under that one central libertarian principle. You have the right to live your life your way without interference, provided that you respect the rights and property of others. And that is a solution that is always looking for another correct problem to solve. And on that correct note, that's going to have to wrap it up for the episode 116 of the Pennsylvania Project. What do you think about our ignored solutions? Or about our guest Democrat, who sounds more like a libertarian, Robert Ziegler? Or the Pennsylvania Green Party's abysmal press release? Or anything somewhat Pennsylvania related. If you have something to say, we'd love to hear from you. Excuse me. You can contact us at PennsylvaniaProject.com right after you sign our education petition, that is. And you can hear us there too, as well as on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and a plethora of other podcast providers. Today's episode is courtesy of Amendment 16 Limited and produced live at the studios of WWDB Radio, broadcasting in Philadelphia at 860 on the AM dial every Monday at 3 p.m., among other times. And now on WPEN 97.5 FM HD2 in Burlington, New Jersey. Each episode is also released as a podcast every Monday at PennsylvaniaProject.com. Our webmaster is Stephen Worley. Our featured Toastmaster narrator is Milena Farber. Our featured Toastmaster cohort is distinguished Toastmaster Rachel Hooks. Official bartender is Brooke Smith. Keyboard wizard, Joe the Pag. Radio producer Brett Kronberger, executive producer Mark Bazzacco, and me, your caster. And this is our last broadcast from the old studio at 555 Presidential Boulevard in Ballard-Kinwood. We'll be moving up the street to Ballard 1 with our next episode. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us. And remember, more important than solving the problem correctly is to solve the problem, the correct problem, even if it gets ignored for years.